State governors and lawmakers are looking for ways to cut. But at what cost?
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Good morning from APM, American Public Media in Los Angeles. Happy Friday. I'm Steve Chiatakis. The debate over public workers in Wisconsin is front and center in the news today, but it's not the only state with budget and political issues going on. Next door, in Michigan, Governor Rick Snyder's proposed nearly eliminating that state's tax incentives for the film industry. Right now, production companies get back around 40% of their investment when they set up shop there. That's made Michigan the third most popular state in the nation for film production, behind California and New York. Alex Rosane is a consultant for the Anderson Group. He's with us from East Lansing, Michigan this morning. Hi.
Good morning.
So what is the governor proposing here?
Well, as part of a larger major tax overhaul, the governor is proposing to severely limit a lot of tax credits for business, including this film incentive.
And what happens to the film groups and the people who are already there? Are they hit by this as well?
Well, existing agreements will be honored, but going forward, it looks like there's going to be a drastic reduction in the credit and a corresponding drastic reduction probably in film activity in the state, because the only reason to make a film in Michigan thus far has been because the state's paying you to do it.
Will other states take advantage, do you think, of Michigan drastically reducing this?
Perhaps. Different states have been toying around with the idea. The film industry is very cost sensitive and very mobile. A lot of locations are competing for film production, and if we step out of the game, someone else will gain.
Was it worth it to have this film credit in the first place? I mean, did it really bring in so much money and economic activity to the state?
Well, I'll say two things. First, everybody, especially in Southeast Michigan, seemed to know somebody who got some work from this. But we have to ask ourselves, do we want to create an industry that's entirely dependent on a state subsidy? That's why it's very controversial whether or not it was worth it.
Alex Rosane, consultant for the Anderson Group in Michigan, thank you so much for your time.
You're welcome.
Let's do the numbers. Markets are higher right now, under a quarter, a third of a percent. The Dow up 39 points to 12,357. Campbell Soup today reported a small dip in profits in the last quarter. Not quite so good.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Ally Bank, offering sleeping money alerts to notify customers when their money could be doing more. Learn more at allybank.com. And by reputation.com, protecting and improving your online reputation while deleting personal data from websites that sell it. Reputation Defender is now reputation.com.
In an effort to cut federal spending, House Republicans have proposed restricting the Federal Communications Commission budget and in the process stopping the FCC from enacting new net neutrality rules. Marketplace's Eve Troh reports.
Late last year, the federal agency passed rules to watch over internet service providers and make sure they're neutral toward all the content on the web. So take Comcast, which bought TV network NBC. Under net neutrality, Comcast can't let its customers watch NBC shows for free but charge for shows on Fox. Analyst Carl Howe with the Yankee Group says it really boils down to this.
Whether there is actually a free market for content on the internet.
He says a free market means competition, not neutrality. Internet service providers could charge whatever they want because they own the networks. For the FCC to level out the playing field, it would need to hire new people and buy new equipment. The House amendment takes away money for that. Howe says some companies are already creating new services with different prices based on types of content.
There's one phone carrier, for example, who was looking at allowing you to have internet access for everything except video, for which you would actually have to pay more.
That would violate net neutrality, which says all ones and zeros must be treated equally, no matter how many of them you want to use. I'm Eve Troh for Marketplace.
President Obama's budget proposal doesn't include any cuts to entitlements. A lot of people in Washington say shoring up Social Security is essential to rein in the budget. Republicans and Democrats came together to fix the program back in 1983. That's when President Reagan and House Speaker Tip O'Neill helped save the program. Julian Zelizer is a presidential historian at Princeton University with us now to talk about that moment in history. Good morning.
Good morning.
Talk about what happened in that Social Security deal from the early 1980s between President Reagan and Speaker Tip O'Neill.
The 1983 reforms were very important and very dramatic. Congress made the decision to solve a short-term imbalance in the program where we didn't have enough money coming in compared to what we were spending. Benefits were cut, taxes were raised, and Republicans and Democrats entered into a bipartisan agreement that fixed the program and got it on sound footing.
Well, it didn't quite fix it, because here we are nearly 30 years later, and we're talking about many of the same things that we were talking about then, right?
That's absolutely true. The 1983 reform was about a short-term problem. Literally, the program was about to run out of money. And that crisis, which was more immediate still than the one we face today, placed a lot of pressure, not just on Democrats and Republicans, but moderates in both parties to come out and take rather courageous stands at the time to find a solution.
What can we learn from that today, then?
Well, I think the first is that reform is possible. The fact is, Social Security was reformed in 1983. It was reformed in 1977. And it was also reformed many times before that, since its creation in 1935. It's very important that there's going to be leaders, meaning members of Congress and the White House, who are willing to do what their party doesn't want them to do.
And could something like that happen today? I mean, you say it takes leadership and courage. Do you see leaders and courageous people out there?
Sometimes, you know, history takes you by surprise. You don't see the leaders today. You don't see the bipartisanship. But this program is enormously popular. And one thing that Republicans and Democrats understand is that there will be payback for both parties if the system breaks. And so I think that pressure can counteract the polarization we see in Washington.
Presidential historian Julian Zelizer from Princeton University. Julian, thanks.
Thank you.
And finally, from the Marketplace Spoiled Food Desk, the Guinness Book of World Records has identified the world's oldest wedding cake, 113 years old. The Willis Museum in England has the cake on display. A sampling of the fruitcake inside shows the dessert is still moist. But the outer shell isn't doing so well. The frosting is cracked from the Blitzkrieg of World War II. I'm Steve Chiatakis in Los Angeles. On Twitter, at Radio Chio, this is the Marketplace Morning Report.
American Public Media.
We're all living such increasingly digital lives. What do you suppose happens when we just pull the plug?
I have not been using the internet for email, for Facebook, for sharing photos.
I'm Kai Rizdahl, getting by getting offline. Next time on Marketplace, the rest of the day's business news as well. It's from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.